You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. An article in the front page of the Washington Post today outlines a Bush administration strategy that calls for a first strike and the use of covert force before a perceived enemy strikes us. A full-page ad in the New York Times placed by the anti-war organization MoveOn.com calls on the administration to go slow with its war agenda. A coalition of 175,000 major civic groups and individual Americans urge Bush to let the inspections work. We can win without war. And the ad invites the public to call the president and Congress members to make their point. Eli Pariser is president of MoveOn.org.
This is a letter from our members and a number of civic groups that we've partnered with to the president. And the ad is basically asking the president to let the inspections work. It says, Congress passed a joint resolution that authorizes you to use war only as a last resort if diplomacy fails. The U.S. has made a commitment to approaching the danger that Saddam Hussein poses through the international community, and it appears that your administration is looking for an excuse to go to war when a peaceful and just solution may be at hand, and we ask that you live up to your word and give diplomacy a chance.
And I understand you have anywhere from 65 to 85,000 signatures signed to this petition so far and still counting?
Actually, we now have 167,000 signers. We've had one of our fastest growing petitions ever on Friday. Friday alone, there were 85,000 folks who signed up. So it's really an immense response, and it underscores the breadth of concern that the Bush administration is not going to let the inspectors do their jobs.
So how is this circulated? Basically email? Through the email?
Yeah, it's email word of mouth. People receive a message that they like, they send it on to their friends, and, you know, it passes along. And one of the most exciting things about this campaign for us is that through that process, we've been introduced to about 40 or 50,000 new folks who are taking their first step into, you know, being active on this issue by signing the petition.
Who are the types of people that have signed this?
Well, our membership is a very, very diverse group. We have a whole range of ages. It's very racially diverse and geographically as well. When I meet our members, the only thing that they often share in common is that they, you know, are concerned about this war on Iraq. They feel like there's work to be done in a mainstream kind of way, that, you know, the war needs to be stopped, and they want to know how best to be effective, and that's what we try to provide them with.
Have you gotten any negative response yet?
Well, you know, when we run these campaigns, inevitably we get a few emails, but what's significant to us is that the proportion of negative emails is so astronomically low compared to the positive ones. We're getting a lot of emails right now from people who are just saying, you know, I was waiting for someone to say, let the inspections work, because, you know, it appears that the Bush administration is trying to mess with a process which may actually lead to a peaceful resolution of the Iraq crisis.
What kind of influence are you hoping it will have?
Well, the New York Times is read by many of the national policymakers, and it's our intent to get the position of our members clearly articulated to those folks in the corridors of power. You know, we also wanted to demonstrate that folks who are concerned about this issue across the country are not alone, that there are hundreds of thousands of Americans, I suspect many millions, who share their concerns and who are, you know, willing to take action on it. And also that there are major civic groups that are speaking out on this issue beyond sort of the usual suspects. Among the signers on the ad are groups like Earth Action, the Veterans for Common Sense, Physicians for Social Responsibility, the National Organization of Women, and the National Council of Churches. And so it's a diverse group of signers.
How much did this ad cost?
Because of the way that we placed it, it cost about $50,000.
And did the money come from donations from the signatories?
Yeah, it's a really neat, you know, how that came about. We went out to our membership on Thursday and said, we would like to run this New York Times ad with your message to the president. We need to raise $27,000 and we'll find matching donors to match that. Over the next 24 hours, we raised over $300,000to support an Iraq advertising campaign. And so that gives us the opportunity to do advertising, potentially radio, TV, you know, really get this message out there. And we're very excited about having the opportunity to, you know, send our members' message, you know, to places where mm-hmm. where usually we're not able to do that.
Mm. Okay, that's quite very impressive, and should, as you say, enable you to do far more than you had initially intended to do.
Yeah, it's an incredibly generous gesture. And part of what's exciting to me about it is that It wasn't a few big donors. It was 14,000, you know, $20, $30, you know, $10 donors who, you know, chipped in. And, you know, it really demonstrates the power of working together in a grassroots kind of way, you know, to do strategic political action. You know, this is just the beginning. When the ad runs, we're going to be making phone calls to Congress and the President, asking them to let the inspections work. We're going to be running, you know, more ads. As I said, we are branching out into, you know, radio and TV ads. And, you know, obviously when the opportunity comes, we'll engage in more direct political, you know, mobilization as well. And, you know, so what's exciting about this is that there's the energy is there to support a very broad and articulate movement.
Eli Pariser is president of MoveOn.org. We spoke with him earlier in the week. The ad is in today's New York Times. Artists, spoken word poets, actors, musicians, and political cartoonists have all weighed in on the impending war against Iraq. In this next segment, Reem Kathuda, Peace Watch producer from WPFW Pacifica Station in Washington, presents this latest creative perspective.
Jelly D is a local D.C. artist. In a new genre he calls rap percussion, he combines traditional African percussion with rap music. With a degree in history from Howard University and the mastery of djembe and congas and rap, Jelly D dropped by WPFW last weekend. I asked him his comments on this build-up for an attack on Iraq and what we can do to stop it.
I'm of the belief that if you are in tune with yourself, know yourself, and with life, then killing is not the solution.
On conga's rhythms and rap words, he offered his perspective on peace in the information age.
Om is the result of a lot of my years of study and internal reflection, and these are a lot of the ideas that I hold about life and my place in it. I think the underlying principle of Om is being in tune with life. And it was my verse in a song that I did with the artist Derek Om. My name is Jolly D, number one rap percussionist. My piece is called Om.
Jelly D, a young storyteller from the local DC poetry scene, recorded at WPFW, Pacifica Station in Washington, DC. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, Amrim Katkhuda.
Iraqi Americans are stuck between Iraq and a hard place. With a pending war about to be waged on their family members still living in Iraq and a concerted effort to take away their civil liberties here at home. During the last month, KPFK's Jennifer Balsusto has interviewed over 30 Iraqi Americans and files this report.
It must be quite painful to watch your loved ones suffer for decades in a country that you had the fortune to escape from. And worse yet, to realize that a brutal war is about to be visited upon your family members once again by your adopted country. Such is the experience of an Iraqi American.
I am Sabih al-Marayati, and I was born in Baghdad, Iraq, in 1935. And I came here to the United States in 1963. You know, I was working there for the oil company, they call it British Petroleum at that time, where the main office was in Baghdad. But unfortunately, when the revolution took over in Ramadan 14th, of 1963, the situation was so bad where the killing by the Ba'athist Party and their gang was almost unbearable. So I had no other choice except to leave the country and come here to the United States. The revolution which took place against Abdul Karim Qasim was it under the Ba'athist Party? The Ba'athist was monitoring the whole situation. It was under the Nationalist Unity. And then the Ba'athist Party took over. And the situation started to get from bad to worse year after year. And the people start to flee from the country whenever they are able to flee. What helped me here to come to the United States, my brothers here, they were American citizens, and through them I went to school. I graduated with a master's degree in chemical engineering, and I was lucky enough to get a job with engineering, and until at the present time I'm still using my profession in the engineering in semiconductor industry.
The Iraqi community here is like, they identify themselves as Iraqis, Iraqi Americans. There is a big segment of Kildanian Iraqis in San Diego. They don't even identify themselves as Kildanian, they say Iraqis. And it's a very specific minority, and you know, it's like the Kurd. But they identify themselves as Iraqis. And in Los Angeles, Jews and Christian and all kind of Christians, you know, there is all kind of like Catholic, Orthodox and Coptic, all kind of, and the Muslims, they meet for entertainment, purely entertainment, like, you know, for Christmas and, you know, like occasions. And they bring Iraqi singers and, you know, they dance and all that. But the religious one, the big mosque in Los Angeles, the Iraqi goes there too, so the Arabs and the Muslims. So it's like really the mosque, the Ahl al-Bayt mosque, is the religious center of the Iraqis. And the Iraqi club is the entertainment center of everybody else. Yeah.
Most of American people, they do not know who is Islam. Some of them, they accuse us, we are terrorists. We are not terrorists. No, we are victims. Islam is the religion of love, the religion of peace, of respect. You know, when any Muslim might someone else, he says salam. Salam is means what? Peace. Salam, not in our tongue, and our heart. We carry salam, peace to ourselves and to all the people. and why, especially Iraqi people, why they came to America? Because they lose their democracy and their freedom in their country. They came here for what? For democracy, for freedom.
Being a 25-year-old Iraqi-American in Los Angeles has its ups and downs, I guess you could say, because I'm kind of in the middle of the fence. You know, my immediate family lives in Los Angeles, and all of our extended family lives in Iraq. So it's kind of like I see that, you know, I watch the news here in the United States, and I see what our government is doing. And then on the other side, I see directly how what our government is doing is affecting other people in other countries. Normally, we just see something on the news and we just discard it as, oh, okay, you know, this is our new foreign policy. We're going after Iraq. We're going after Iran. We're going after whoever. But in this case, I actually know people who are affected by the decisions that our government make. I think American citizens my age, after 9/11, are leaning towards the right, leaning towards war, leaning towards what our government wants to do.
I'm of Iraqi Jewish descent. My family is from Singapore. My parents' generation actually is from Singapore. My grandfather was born in Baghdad. At that time, it was called Mesopotamia, and traveled to Singapore by boat, where he thought he could prosper, thought the climate was milder. Nowadays, regarding the war in Iraq, I have not a cultural tie whatsoever, but a emotional and political tie to it. For example, I tell my students, I work at a detention camp, and they'll ask me what I am, quote unquote, and I'll say I'm of Iraqi Jewish descent, and they'll say, "Oh, we're bombing them now," and I'll say, "But my family's from Singapore, and even so, you know, I don't really have much of a tie to Iraq," and then explain why. Then talk about the war and my political take on what's going on. I think color of skin and cultural difference is something that we're definitely using as a way to hype up support and justification for what's going on, even though it's at a subliminal level. It's definitely happening. Difference is scary, and it's easy for people to think that people who are different from us are weird and don't deserve what others deserve.
My family is in Iraq. All my family is there, and I'm worried about them, really. And I sometimes hear a lot of things about them. The kids are really hysterical about bombing. They will send me a message and say, "Please tell Mr. Bush not to bomb, because, you know, please tell them. All the children are begging you not to bomb us."
We used to have a huge middle class people in Iraq. Now, it really, there's no middle class at all. Majority are poor, and the minority, which belong to the government, they are really very super rich. So there is no middle class anymore. So the society is quite different. A recent visit to one of my friends to Iraq stated that people there, they really have no say at all. They just walk like sheep, like a herd of sheep. And everybody mind his own business, but they are very scared. All of them are very, very scared.
I went to Iraq right after the ceasefire, you know, the Gulf War, like 1991. I went with a friend, and we took in like 3 tons worth of medicine and clothing, toys and stuff. And the damage was like very raw, like the buildings, it's just bombed, the homes, the roads was all bombed. In 1995, I saw like everything was repaired, everything fixed. And the food was really, really difficult. The food situation, no wheat, no rice, no nasta. And we gave them medicine. But this time, I saw the hospitals only from the outside. I did not go in this time. What I noticed also, like in my brother's homes, all their like toilet seat, it's all broken, cracked, the sink cracked. And I said, why? And the floors all cracked, the walls, their windows. And I said, why? Why is this? And you don't have earthquake, you know, because we, you know, I identify with the earthquake. I live in California. And they said, no, this is from the bombing. Every time they bomb, and like, for example, if they bomb like a very strategic building, which is like next door, when they bomb it, they said it feels like earthquake. Everything shakes. So that's why. And they don't have money to replace them.
I belong to two cultures. I'm lucky to have that dual upbringing. Half of my life was in Iraq and half of it in here. And I belong to both of them. I would regard my roots to be back in Iraq, and my branches, if you wish to call it that way, is the United States. And I appreciate the freedom in here, the opportunities, but still I have a very strong feeling about my original country, Iraq, because I have a lot of memories in there and a family.
I came here to the United States in 1979 as a student. When we came here to this country, we were just students, basically. At that time, the regime was just as bad as it is right now. Nothing have changed. But basically, more or less, at that time, the rest of the world didn't know about Saddam. Only the Iraqi knows about Saddam. And we, as students, we tried to do everything we could at that time to let the world know what Saddam is. But at that time, we faced a very big objection at that time, because Saddam was actually on the side of the United States, or vice versa, should I say. And at that time, it was a really tough time that we wanted to tell the world what Saddam is and what he's doing to the people, but nobody was willing to listen, because at that time, they don't want to listen to the voices of the people. They wanted to listen to what the government says and wants, and that's basically what it was.
Recently, there was an article in the New York Times, which was on a policy statement that was issued by the White House, saying that in the case of an invasion against Iraq, Iraqis in the United States, including Iraqi Americans, Americans, citizens who are of Iraqi ethnicity, are going to be targeted for electronic surveillance, who are going to have their discussions and their phone calls and their movements monitored by the government, who are anybody who is perceived to even sympathize with Iraq or the Iraqi people are going to be investigated for possible support of domestic terrorism. And this is the same kind of rhetoric and of just fear that was instilled into our community in the first Gulf War as well. I mean, we heard all kinds of rumors about them building, you know, camps or reserving special jail cells or something like that to have like a mass detention. And I don't think, I think back then I was probably maybe more naive and I didn't really believe it would happen. As an immigration attorney now and watching all of my clients, especially people from our community, being detained for months on end without charge, without any reason, with secret evidence being hurled against them, not even knowing what they're being accused of, I really don't see this as a positive or hopeful situation. I think that our community is under attack more than ever. And I think Iraqi Americans who have been living here for 30, 35 years, for even, you know, since the war, are all peaceful people. We're all law-abiding people. We're very educated people. We've contributed more to this country, I think, you know, than some just, you know, Americans who were living here all their lives also. And I think that it's really a shame to see our Constitution being just desecrated like this, and to see our government act like this without even consulting, you know, people and being a democratic country anymore. I think it's really scary. I don't know where things are going to go.
I was a founding member of the INC when it started in Vienna and participated in all the conferences, and still a member of the executive committee for the INC. The INC, in the beginning, the plan was to make it an umbrella organization for all the Iraqi opposition. So that's why it considered the Kurds, the Islamic groups, and all the liberal group, the militaries. But during its development, it has been controlled by different leadership that they try to monopolize the whole INC to their sides. The idea of the INC, it was a very unique and inspiring idea for the Iraqis to make an umbrella organization for everybody. Right now, some of the groups within the INC are supported by the political leadership of the Pentagon, and while the others you find in the administration, like in the State Department, the CIA, against that group. That's why you find the division even on making the Iraqi opposition conference in Brussels, now in London. There is disagreement between two groups. Groups are totally supported by the political leadership of the Pentagon, the other one by the CIA, the other one by the State Department. And that's the dilemma we have now.
In my opinion, President Bush is a very dangerous man. He's a man that is surrounded by fundamentalists, by a clique of people that's not really elected. So he appointed them, and most of them turn out to be his ideology, which is fundamentalism and Zionism. And they are really the ones that is doing very dangerous program, which is war, war, war. I mean, where they talk about always war, war, and war, and nothing else. In my opinion, a lot of us are watched. And as you know, recently in the New York Times, they were talking about targeting Iraqi American because of if there's anything that happened that we target Iraqi American, like what they did target the Japanese in World War II, which is really unfair, as if we never learned anything from the history.
Iraqi Americans are people from two societies on the verge of violently confronting one another for the second time in a dozen years. They bear this burden with grace and a heavy heart. This is Jennifer Bisesto with Pacifica's Peace Watch.
That was the last in a three-part series on Iraqi Americans produced by Dan Pavlish, Nathan Thompson, and Jennifer Bisesto of Pacifica Station KPFK. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett, Sidrak Franklin, Matt Bradley, and Marcus Tyler Brown. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.